VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Crosstalk here on VCY America, and so glad that you could join us for the broadcast today. Just before we get into our main topic, our main focus today, which is going to surround the topic of COVID, COVID-19, and a matter of fact, even beyond that, there's a special hearing that was held last week on federal health agencies and the COVID cartel. What are they hiding? I'll get more into that in just a moment, but certainly the nation was watching the news that came forth from the United States Supreme Court this morning. And looking at the EpicTimes.com, the Supreme Court ruled that former President Donald Trump is eligible to run for office. That overturns a Colorado Supreme Court decision that found him ineligible as a candidate and disqualified him from the state ballot under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. Well, the court said that responsibility for enforcing Section 3 against federal office holders and candidates rests with Congress and not the states. The judgment of the Colorado Supreme Court, therefore, cannot stand. All nine members of the court agreed with that result. This is one day before Super Tuesday, a number of states going to the polls tomorrow and casting votes. And we understand as of mid-February, Trump attorneys have reported 88 challenges to President Trump's eligibility in 45 states. And so that issue going on, but the Supreme Court ruling unanimously this morning that Colorado, you cannot disqualify former President Trump from the ballot. We know this is going to have grave implications to those states who wanted to do just that. Matter of fact, Illinois was poised to remove him from the ballot, the state of Maine and other states working on this as well. Also, just before we get to our main topic today, a special alert to our listening friends in the state of Minnesota. The Minnesota Association of Christian Home Educators, along with other family rights groups and First Amendment groups, are certainly concerned as to what is happening right now in the Minnesota legislature. You see, in 2023, the Minnesota legislature passed a bill that added gender identity as a protected class under the Minnesota Human Rights Act. However, the bill did not offer any protections for religious liberty for people of faith. For example, that implies that a Christian institution would not be able to decline employment based on gender identity or bathrooms that could not be limited to gender at birth, etc. Well, last week, this is in Minnesota, the House Judiciary Committee heard House File 4021, a bill that's aimed at clarifying language and enhancing penalties related to the Human Rights Act. However, the protections for religious liberties are not included. There was a hearing. An amendment was proposed to incorporate religious protections in the bill, and it was rejected right along party lines. So while HF, that's House File 4021, is moving to the House floor and could be taken up for a floor vote at any time, the companion bill, Senate File 4292, is scheduled for a hearing in the Senate Judiciary Committee and the Public Safety Committee this coming Wednesday. That would be on March the 6th at 12:30 p.m. in Capitol Room G15 in the Minnesota State Capitol. So a number of Minnesotans that listen to Crosstalk here, we want to give you that advance notice. I'm sure if you need more information, you can reach out to the this is not just homeschoolers. This is the Homeschool Association speaking out on this, but the Minnesota Association of Christian Home Educators. You can check with them, check with the Minnesota Family Policy, et cetera, and I'm sure they'll be able to get you the information regarding this, what is a direct attack upon religious liberty in the state of Minnesota. So we bring that to your attention because that hearing coming up in the legislature less than 48 hours from now. Well, ladies and gentlemen, on February 26, 2024, just one week ago today, U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin led a roundtable discussion that was titled Federal Health Agencies and the COVID Cartel, What Are They Hiding? In this discussion, the senator and a panel of experts exposed the corruption and the censorship of the COVID cartel, including federal health agencies, big pharma, legacy media, and big tech. the event really opened the eyes of the public to the failure of the global elite and their institutions. And the forum gave a voice to those who have been suppressed, those whose voices have been marginalized in all of this as well. And Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, who hosted this, said to me, "The COVID pandemic has opened my eyes to the failure and corruption of the global elite and their institutions, including government. Unfortunately, many eyes remain closed, and the global elite will use all of their power to keep them closed. They maintain power by controlling information. They relentlessly push their narrative while at the same time suppressing and marginalizing dissident voices. In this case, they overhyped fear over a virus that they helped create in order to push a profitable gene therapy platform and gain greater control over our lives." Well, Senator Ron Johnson held this hearing last week, included a number of notables. Dr. Robert Malone was there and speaking, Dr. Harvey Risch, Barbara Lowe Fisher, Dr. Pierre Corey, and many, many others. And over today and tomorrow, Lord willing, and we'll see how far we go, we're going to bring you this hearing because, friends, the word is not getting out across the nation. Yes, Ron Johnson had it. He's got it posted to his website. But the legacy media is not picking up on this at all. That's why these voices are marginalized. They're suppressed. They're being silenced. And Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, gave a voice to those who have been voiceless here in this effort. So right now, let's go to that committee. That wasn't a committee hearing. It was a roundtable hosted by Senator Ron Johnson.
I want to thank everybody for coming, the members of the media, obviously members of the audience, and in particular the participants who have journeyed a long ways in many cases and spent some time and effort preparing for this. In preparing for this event, I was reminded of Louis Brandeis's quote in the Supreme Court decision, Whitney versus California. To quote him, "If there be a time to expose through discussion the falsehood and fallacies, to avert the evil by the processes of education, the remedy to be applied is more speech, not enforced silence." I think that quote is completely applicable to what's been happening over the last 3-4 years during the pandemic. To me, the COVID pandemic has opened my eyes to the failure and corruption of the global elite and their institutions, including government. Unfortunately, many eyes remain closed, and the global elite will use all of their power to keep them closed. They maintain power by controlling information. They relentlessly push their narrative while, at the same time, suppressing and marginalizing dissident voices. In this case, they overhyped fear over a virus they helped create in order to push a profitable gene therapy platform and gain greater control over our lives. Along the way, they sabotaged early treatment, denied natural immunity and vaccine injuries, caused trillions of dollars of economic devastation, and destroyed an untold number of people's lives. Unfortunately, they remain in control. Today, I've assembled some of the dissident voices. Many have paid a heavy price for exercising their right to free speech, to offer a different perspective, a perspective that was not allowed. Some on the panel will be familiar to the audience. Some will be new faces. They come from diverse backgrounds, but they all share one attribute. Their eyes have been opened, and once opened, they will not be closed. The title for today's event is Federal Health Agencies and the COVID Cartel. What are they hiding? My eyes have been opened over the last several years as I became aware of certain facts that have largely been suppressed, as well as policies pushed by the elite that made no sense to me and were contrary to the common good. 2 weeks ago, I received an email with an all-too-common story of heartbreak and despair. It was from a young man whose 36-year-old wife's periods stopped within a couple of weeks of receiving her second COVID vaccine. They were recently married and planned on having children. I recommended they contact the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance, FLCCC, one of the few groups of doctors attempting to treat vaccine injuries. Let me quote from his last email to me, quote, "We had already gotten COVID in February 2020. Alas, unless they can bring her ovaries back to life, I'm not sure Dr. Corey can help. It breaks my heart. She chose career, got the baby family bug, and now she can't have children. She cries all the time. Apologizes to me like it's her fault. Someone needs to make them pay, and we need safeguards so that this doesn't happen again. Unquote. That pretty well sums up the purpose of today's public event, exposing the truth of what happened and holding people accountable so we can prevent a travesty like this from ever happening again. Now, I'm sure the response from the COVID cartel will be something like, quote, Senator, fertility problems in 36-year-old women are very common, unquote. Just like former NIH Director Francis Collins told me when I asked about all the deaths being reported on VAERS, quote, Senator, people die, unquote. The fact that both of these statements are as true as they are callous highlights the challenge we face in exposing the truth. On Thursday, February 15th, the House Select Committee on the Coronavirus Pandemic held a public hearing on the COVID vaccine. The subcommittee was not on what I would consider a fact-finding mission. Instead, its purpose appeared to be rehabilitating federal health agencies that have lost the trust of many Americans and reinforcing the mantras that the vaccines are safe and effective, vaccine injuries are rare, that benefits outweigh the risk, and that the science is clear and overwhelming. And anyone challenging this narrative is an anti-science conspiracy theorist. In other words, second opinions are not allowed. To me, this attitude is the antithesis of science. True scientific inquiry starts with skepticism, challenging what we think we know, but might not be so. I believe the growing corruption of science, scientific research, medical journals, federal health agencies, and as a result, the practice of medicine, has been exposed in the failed response to the pandemic. To repair the damage that has been done, we must honestly and relentlessly pursue the truth. I am grateful to today's participants and to all those who are fearlessly doing just that. One final point. I am amazed at the knowledge mankind has obtained over the millennia. But I would argue that what we don't know vastly exceeds what we do know. So as we pursue truth, we must pursue it with the humility that that reality demands. Now, that's my opening statement. The title of this hearing is, What Are They Hiding? My own evidence of that is, for example, over 60 oversight letters that I have written to the federal health agencies. This is just a small number covering two issues, hot lots and the standard operating procedures of their analysis on VAERS. But some of my first oversight letters were prompted by the emails that were released under FOIA in June of 2021. These are Anthony Fauci's emails.
We're going to pause right there. This is Senator Ron Johnson as he held together this roundtable, federal health agencies and the COVID cartel. What are they hiding? And friends, he's going to reveal just shortly the emails that have been redacted by Dr. Anthony Fauci. Back in a minute. You're listening to Crosstalk.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, creation author with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, was Genesis written as poetry?
No, it wasn't, Chris, but this has been a favorite claim of liberals, subtly indicating that Genesis was a work of art and not meant to be taken as literal history. But this has been shown to be false. At the Institute for Creation Research, we've investigated this claim. It was found by statistical analysis of the verb tenses used in the Genesis account of creation that it's about the least poetic passage in all the Old Testament. It was written as sober narrative history and was meant to be understood by its readers as history. Of course, even if it were poetry, it doesn't mean it's not to be believed. Who says God can't write with flair? But he wrote Genesis as a sober historical account, and we need to believe it as such. Let's go back to Genesis and get it right.
For more on the foundational principles set forth in Genesis, visit us on the web at www.icr.org.
The This is Crosstalk on BCY America, and friends, today we're listening to audio recorded just 1 week ago, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin calling together this roundtable discussion on federal health agencies and the COVID cartel. What are they hiding? Let's continue on.
Again, they were released under FOIA. In other words, somebody had to go to court. Even though members of Congress, we have the right to see these things. Somebody had to take them to court. Once they were released, about 4,000 pages, we requested unredacted versions of these things on June 11th, 2021. By July, we received basically the same 4,000 redacted pages. In September 2021, we requested only 400 of the 4,000. We narrowed our request. In October 2021 through January 2022, they allowed us to look at 50 pages at a time in a reading room. We couldn't take copies, we could just take notes. We are down to the last 50 pages. They will not release these. It's been now going close to 2 years. This is what has been provided to us. Do you think there might be some incriminating information in this? Now again, these are government documents. This is government, federal records. This should be made available to Congress. This should be made available to the American public, but it is not. So that's the Fauci emails. My letters on hot lots, I've written four of them, starting in December of 2021. The first letter compared 25,000 lots of COVID vaccine to 22,000 lots of flu vaccine. One COVID lot had 5,297 adverse reactions associated with it. The worst flu lot had 137. So 5,300 versus 137. 365 COVID lots had more than 100 adverse events. Only 10 flu lots had more than 100. And 80% of the serious adverse events, those with emergency room visits, hospitalization, or death, were associated with only 5% of lots. So again, to me, I'm from manufacturing. That shows to me a manufacturing process out of control. You know, it took us a year to get some kind of response, and basically the response from the agencies was, we don't see any variation in lots. Okay. On January 29, 2001, shortly after the emergency use authorization, the FDA and CDC issued a standing operating procedure on their VAERS analysis. They were going to do what they call proportional reporting ratios. I've written eight letters to the agencies on this. First of all, the CDC said, the PRR wasn't done. Then later on, somebody in some context admitted that they were done. So we contact them about that contradiction. They admit, okay, we did them. But what we're really doing is we're going to rely on a much better analysis, empirical Bayesian data mining. But we don't do it. The FDA does it. So the runaround continued. And so we go to the FDA. To this day, we have not received any of the empirical Bayesian analysis that they said they're relying on. Why not? What are they hiding? Again, we pay their salaries, we fund their agencies, we fund these studies. The American people have a right to know, and they're not being given that knowledge. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Dr. Robert Malone. Dr. Malone is a Maryland licensed physician and scientist with over 30 years of experience in the biotech and biodefense industry, federal contracting, regulatory affairs, and project management. He is a named inventor on 9 U.S. patents covering the initial invention and use of mRNA as a drug for vaccines. Dr. Malone.
Thank you, Senator. I'll be succinct. The SARS-CoV-2 modified mRNA-based vaccine products were deployed via emergency use authorization without adequate non-clinical and clinical testing, and without full disclosure of known patient risk and efficacy data. This violated well-established, legislatively mandated patient-informed consent requirements. The FDA and HHS justified these actions as necessary due to reliance on deeply flawed modeling data indicating that SARS-CoV-2 was associated with an infection fatality rate of 3.4%. 3.4 out of every 100 people infected would die. That was what the modeling was. That was the justification. Subsequent clinical research experience has revealed a number of problems with the genetic vaccine technology-based SARS-CoV-2 products, which have been marketed as vaccines. In most cases, there has been an effort to obscure or deny facts in public communication by government and pharmaceutical industry representatives. These inconvenient facts include the following. First, the modified mRNA and adenoviral vectored products employ cutting-edge gene therapy and gene delivery technologies and should be regulated as gene therapy products. Number two, these, quote, leaky products did not prevent infection, replication, and spread of SARS-CoV-2. An indiscriminate mass administration of these products contributed to evolution of more antibody-resistant viral strains. In contrast, number three, to official HHS communications, these products distribute throughout the body after injection and are not localized to injection site and associated draining lymph nodes. This wide distribution contributes to product toxicity and risk. Number four, the viral, quote, spike protein, which these products cause patients' bodies to manufacture, is a genetically engineered toxin. Number five, the lipid nanoparticle formulation used to deliver the modified mRNA has intrinsic toxicity in humans. Number six, these products do not deliver natural messenger RNA, but rather a synthetic chemically modified form with extended stability, which causes the body to produce, quote, frame-shifted, unnatural, unintended proteins in addition to the spike protein. And number seven, these products are contaminated with previously undisclosed short DNA fragments, which are also delivered into tissues and cells of patients, and which may damage patients' genomes. That concludes my testimony.
Dr. Malone, I think one of the things that always bothers me is so much of what we're learning in terms of the harms of these vaccines was clearly known before they were rolled out. Can you went over a list of a number of things, but what was known before it ever got the emergency use authorization?
We have the artifactual evidence of what was known in the form of the Pfizer Common Technical Document that was first obtained by Byron Bridal from the Japanese. It was prevented from being distributed by the U.S. FDA. And it revealed extensive understanding that we had this widespread biodistribution of these products, that they cause the encoded protein to be manufactured in virtually every major tissue throughout the body. It was known that there was a strong inflammatory and toxic reactions associated with these lipid nanoparticles. This is fundamental knowledge. It was in the field of these cationic-based lipid nanoparticle delivery systems. It was known that these particles will deliver both RNA and DNA into cells and tissues. It was known that the modification, the pseudouridine, altered the immune response to the RNA. That's the whole reason why the incorporation of pseudouridine was performed. It was known that the pseudouridine would increase the longevity of these products, that this was not natural RNA. It was not known and not investigated as to whether or not these products would be, quote, shed. It was not known and not investigated whether or not these products would cause reproductive toxicity, whether they would be secreted in body fluids. A number of things that should have been investigated under normal FDA protocols and procedures, not the least of which is characterization of the contamination or adulteration of the short DNA fragments, which are intrinsic to the manufacturing process, and which in prior FDA regulations have always been considered to be a risk for a form of genotoxicity called insertional mutagenesis.
Let me ask, because you obviously did a lot of development of the mRNA platform. It had always failed, correct? And can you describe when it was tested? Again, it seems like it'd be a marvelous invention. It could, you know, be used for, you know, specific applications, but why was it never successfully rolled out before the pandemic?
So that's a good question, and it's a complex, tortured pathway having to do with politics, patents, different companies, their financial interests, and academia. There was a basically a lag prior between the initial discoveries and when the accelerated development was largely sponsored by DARPA that had to do with the patent half-life. So when the patents were finally expired that had originally been filed in 1989 and 1990, then there was a rapid increase in development effort. But repeated failures in terms of the toxicology, inflammatory responses, and inadequate immune responses. There has been major...
So let me just stop right there. So what you're saying is they noticed that this caused inflammation. They noticed that it was not particularly effective. So they knew this from previous testing, different applications. This didn't come as a surprise to anybody.
Correct.
So it didn't come as a surprise to you.
Correct. But when I called colleagues early on, I was reassured, including Peter Cullis at the University of British Columbia, who really should have received the Nobel Prize. I was reassured that these issues had been addressed, that these particles would remain localized at the site of injection. It turns out that was, let's say, a triumph of hope over data.
Oh, wasn't that a lie?
Yeah, I think that's...
I mean, if they'd already done the biodistribution studies and Japan knew this, they knew it was going to biodistribute, accumulate in every organ of the body, they knew that the vaccine would not stay in the arm, would not stay localized, and that these inflammatory responses and all the other problems of DNA would be an issue.
Correct. And what's fascinating about that is that the FDA allowed the use of the least sensitive method to detect that distribution. This is akin to some of the artifacts that Dr. McKernan has found in the DNA analysis. So the FDA knowingly allowed the least sensitive method, and I actually had a Zoom teleconference with Dr. Marks to discuss this and was reassured that the new data package, which is the one that was blocked by the courts for 70 years, demonstrated that there was no risks and I should not be concerned about these things. So I actually attempted to communicate to the FDA and Peter Marks about my concerns and about the meaning of the data and the apparent use of a least sensitive method to analyze the distribution, and I was, you know, casually dismissed.
Thank Dr. Malone. Our next participant.
Friends, we're going to pause right there in this discussion, and this is why we're bringing this to you. This is, you know, big tech is not allowing you to know this information. Big pharma has been working against this. The legacy media has been working against it. Federal health agencies, we're here to keep you informed on Crosstalk. Back in 1 minute on the VCY American Network.
Year after year, generation after generation, we as Americans enjoy the right and opportunity to let our voices be heard through the election of our governing officials. With over 200 years of peaceful transition from one elected body to another, the stability of America's republic stands alone among nations. Our founders pledged their life, their fortune, and their sacred honor in the establishment of this nation. Our country's founding documents have guided this nation and are the substance by which today's laws are judged. Do you own a copy of the Constitution? Documents of Freedom is a pocket-sized booklet containing the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and all other amendments passed. The booklet also features the Declaration of Independence and Washington's Farewell. Documents of Freedom is available for a donation of $5 or more to VCY America and can be made by calling 1-800-729-9829. That's 1-800-729-9829.
You're listening to Crosstalk on BCY America, and today we're playing audio from a roundtable that was happening just 1 week ago today, hosted by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He has really dug his teeth into this issue to expose what has been covered up by federal health agencies and by Big Pharma and by the legacy media and by Big Tech, and really exposing this by bringing together this panel of experts held in this session called Federal Health Agencies and the COVID Cartel. What are they hiding? We only heard so far from Senator Ron Johnson, his opening remarks, also that of Dr. Robert Malone. Wasn't he the inventor of the mRNA? Now he's just getting ready to introduce Dr. Jessica Rose.
Next participant is Dr. Jessica Rose. She has a bachelor's degree in applied mathematics, master's in medicine, immunology, PhD in computational biology, and postdoctorals in molecular biology and biochemistry. She is currently an independent researcher and scientific writer, sharing her work on our website and Substack platforms. And so does Dr. Malone. A lot of the participants here are using that platform to be able to speak freely. Dr. Rose, you apparently like school a lot better than I did, but please go ahead.
I'd like to thank Senator Johnson for this incredible opportunity to speak today. It is, in fact, the third invitation extended to me, but only the first that I could attend due to draconian impositions on freedom of movement that we've all been subjected to over the past 4 years. Thank you all for attending and caring so much about each other and the injured. Today, I speak for the people injured by the COVID-19 injectable products through VAERS data. Analysis of the VAERS pharmacovigilance database in the context of the COVID-19 injectable products has revealed strong emergent safety signals from myocarditis to death that are not being acknowledged by the owners of the data. This goes against standard operating procedures and begs the question, why are the injured being hidden? Fact, the Bradford Hill criteria are used to assess causality in epidemiological data, such as the VAERS pharmacovigilance system. Fact, the proportional reporting ratio is used to assess whether or not a particular adverse event is more commonly reported in the context of a particular drug. If the PRR is greater than 1, a causal effect is indicated. Fact, the PRR calculation for death from VAERS in the context of the COVID-19 shots using current VAERS data is 3.6. Fact, the underreported number of deaths successfully filed to VAERS by January 20th, 2021 was 634. Based on historical guidelines, this was sufficient as a signal, not only to prompt an investigation, but to shut down the rollout of the COVID-19 shots. Fact, in 1999, a rotavirus vaccine designed to prevent rotavirus gastroenteritis was pulled from the market due to an intussusception signal emanating from VAERS, which comprised 584 cases. Question, if 584 cases of intussusception were enough to prompt product removal, then why weren't 634 cases of death not enough to prompt COVID-19 product removal? Fact, the early death count was hidden. Fact, currently, 1,615,998 reports of adverse events have been successfully filed to VAERS in the context of the COVID-19 injectable products, with a staggering 1,013,442 reports filed in 2021 alone, when considering both the foreign and domestic data sets. The number of adverse events reported to the domestic VAERS data set for all vaccines combined has been on average 39,000 in total per year, and has been very slowly and steadily increasing in direct proportion to the increasing number of vaccine products on the market. See slide 1. In 2021, however, a 1,417% increase in reporting occurred, whereby 93% of these reports were in the context of the COVID-19 products. Fact, age is not deterministic for adverse event reporting. Since administration of the COVID-19 products to the 0-4 age group commenced, the rate of adverse event reporting has been increasing faster than for any other age group. Fact, the argument that this spike in reporting is due to increased shot administration is false. Slide 2 shows the comparison of the number of adverse events per million doses in the context of influenza vaccines and the COVID-19 injectable products in 2019 and 2021, respectively. On the left are the total adverse events. On the right are the deaths. The COVID-19 injectable products are associated with a 26 and a 100-fold increase in total adverse events and deaths, respectively, when compared per million doses with influenza vaccines in the same time frame. Fact: the Bradford Hill criterion reversibility is satisfied. When a drug is withdrawn, the side effects disappear. A strong correlation of R equals 0.8 and a high covariance exists between shot rollout data and myocarditis reports filed according to Our World in Data, new vaccination data, and VAERS data, respectively. As shot demand wanes, so do the myocarditis reports. See slide 3A. Fact: the Bradford Hill criterion specificity is satisfied. A very specific population at a specific site and disease is reported with no other likely explanation. Dose 2 is associated with a fourfold increase in reporting of myocarditis in 15-year-old boys. This indicates specificity with regard to age and gender. See slide 3B. Fact: the Bradford Hill criterion dose response is satisfied. Greater exposure leads to greater incidence of the effect. Following dose 2, an increase in signal occurs. See slide 3B. Fact: myocarditis is not transient or mild. A new paper published by Rose et al. In the journal Therapeutic Advances in Drug Safety shows that myocarditis is associated with hospitalization in 76% of reports. There are seven more Bradford Hill criteria that are satisfiable. That's a 10 out of 10 bingo. Conclusion: standard operating procedures for analysis of safety signals emergent from VAERS, when utilized, reveal causal links between the COVID-19 injectable products and the adverse events investigated. Standard operating procedures are not being followed by the owners of the data, namely CDC, HHS, and FDA, and this equates to hiding the millions of people reporting not only adverse events but injuries in the context of the COVID-19 injectable products. Thank you.
Dr. Rose, I'm not a doctor, so when you're talking about the incidence associated with the rotavirus, what condition was that you're comparing the deaths of the COVID vaccine to?
Intussusception. It's folding over of the bowel, so it was kind of directly like contradictory to the whole point of giving the product. And
so again, a serious adverse event, but not death.
No, exactly.
And so, and there were how many of those instances?
600 and.
Yeah, and right now we're up to almost 37,000 deaths worldwide with the COVID-19 vaccine. 24.4% of those are occurring on the day of vaccination within 1 or 2 days.
Yep.
And nothing to see here, right?
Which is another Bradford Hill criteria, temporality.
So some things I've read in terms of your work, you've talked about the IgG4 phenomenon here with the multiple injections. Can you talk a little bit about what that means to immunity?
Right. So one of the things that blew my mind was when they started talking about repeat boosters because, I mean, anybody who knows a little bit about immunology will start to think tolerance. And it's now published in the literature that there's an inversion of a subclass of immunoglobulin G called IgG4, which is associated with tolerance and subsequently autoimmunity, being reported in the context of the Pfizer and the Moderna shots after repeat injections. This is no surprise. It's based on repeat antigen exposure, the antigen being the proteins that are being produced by the body, by the host cells that are transfected with this technology. I'm not saying spike protein on purpose because it's not probably not full-length spike protein being produced by the host cells, but bits, sometimes potentially aberrant proteins off target.
We'll get to that, but mm-hmm. Just to kind of close out this, you know, those are antibodies that, for example, you have an allergy. Your allergist mm-hmm. is going to try and boost those because that reduces your immune response to it, right? So these are normally present as a fractional percentage in your body, and they're up to what percent?
It's something like 20. Like, there's a total inversion.
So the vaccines are basically producing an antibody that the body uses to suppress your immune response to an antigen.
That's right. And more exposure means, well, maybe it's not one-to-one, but your tolerance level is going to go up. So you don't want to become tolerant to something that's supposed to be something your body is fighting.
Which explains why people who've gotten multiple boosters are getting COVID time and time and time again, potentially.
I think I would put my money on that. Absolutely.
We've only got a couple seconds left. Do you want to talk about the DNA contamination and the... Well, Kevin will be doing that.
I'm going to leave that
okay,
to Kevin.
Okay, then we'll move on. Our next participant is Mr. Ed Dowd. Mr. Dowd is currently a founding partner of Finance Technology, spelled with a PH. He has worked on Wall Street most of his career for firms such as HSBC, Donaldson, Lufkin, and Jenrette, Independence Investments, and most notably at BlackRock as a portfolio manager where he managed a $14 billion growth equity portfolio for 10 years. Mr. Dowd.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. A pleasure to be here and an honor. At Finance Technologies, which was founded in June of 2022, we've been tracking excess deaths, disabilities, and injuries across the globe, mostly Western nations, but today I'm going to speak to the U.S., and we're going to talk about our estimated human and economic costs of the pandemic policy since 2021. Here's my statement. The U.S. government, along with the WHO, declared a pandemic in 2020 and a number of policy responses that we were told would slow the spread of COVID-19 and allow us to come up with a vaccine in record time, dubbed Operation Warp Speed. The 2020 policy responses included societal lockdowns, masking, and social distancing. In 2021, we began the rollout of a vaccine solution that was predominantly a novel mRNA-based technology, with the vendors predominantly being Pfizer and Moderna. This solution had never undergone human trials prior to 2020 and was approved under an EUA in late 2020 within record time for a vaccine and in a noticeably short trial period. The government deemed these products safe and effective and told the nation they would prevent you from getting and transmitting COVID-19. These statements have since been proven false. It has become clear that the U.S. government, along with the health regulators, do not desire an honest accounting of these policies that were imposed mostly under federal mandates. I will predominantly focus on the human and economic costs since the beginning of 2021, which, if they were favorable to the current regime, you would be hearing them scream these results from the rooftops. I will focus on three buckets, which we break down as excess deaths, excess disabilities, and lost work time, in other words, injuries. When analyzing the excess death human costs, it's interesting to note that in 2020, there were approximately 458,000 excess deaths, of which 73% were age 65 and older, and 15 to 64 comprising just 27%. Note, we were told in 2020 that the COVID-19 risk of death was primarily in the older populations. However, in 2021, with the rollout of the quote-unquote safe and effective vaccine, there were approximately another 500,000 excess deaths, but a mix shift had occurred from older to younger. In 2021, the 65-plus age category was 57%. Remember, it was 73% in 2020 of the total, while the 15 to 64 cohort increased to 43%. The absolute excess death increase from 20 to 21 for the productive working age 15 to 64 was 73%. So in 2020, 124,000 people perished excessively, and then in 2021, it rose to 215,000.
We're going to pause right there. You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. You have a roundtable held by Senator Ron Johnson on federal health agencies and the COVID cartel. What are they hiding? We'll be right back. For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website is worldviewreport.com. Recently, a Michigan State Board member warned on video in their meeting that the Attorney General of Michigan, Dana Nessel, is pushing for a list of who homeschools. And he said this is a precursor to unwarranted home entry. My friends, this is very dangerous. Now, you say, I don't live in Michigan, I don't homeschool. Well, a lot of times what gets through the federal courts, in this case is likely headed to the federal courts, starts to set precedent for other states and eventually the whole nation if it goes to the right federal courts. And then, of course, this is a freedom of religion issue, a parental authority issue.
So everybody in America should be concerned that they are looking to make a list of who homeschools in Michigan and the talk of unwarranted home entry. My friends, Christians are increasingly getting on lists. Be vigilant.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. We're playing for you today audio from a roundtable that was held last week, February 26, by Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. He led this roundtable titled Federal Health Agencies and the COVID Cartel. And folks, what they are giving this, they're giving voices to those people who have been suppressed or marginalized with their voices. And so we're hearing some of the testimony that was given at this event. And Lord willing, we're going to continue tomorrow with this information that the mainstream, the legacy media is not dealing with, information that the big pharma is not wanting to get out. And right now we have Mr. Ed Dowd, who's testifying from Finance Technologies about the excess deaths, the excess human toll, the excess injuries and so forth happened as a result of COVID. We'll get to more of this discussion here as well, and continuing on with this roundtable that was held by Senator Ron Johnson.
The total excess deaths since the rollout of the vaccine in the U.S., including 21, 22, and 23, is approximately 1.1 million. We estimate the economic cost of productive working-age people dying at $15.6 billion. When analyzing disabilities, it is interesting to note that there were no excess disabilities in 2020. Using the civilian labor force, we have calculated an increase of 2.3 million individuals with disabilities costing the economy an estimated $77 billion. We want to note that the excess disability number for total population 16 plus is 3.5 million. When analyzing lost work time, which we call injuries, we estimate 28.4 million individuals are chronically absent, resulting in an estimated economic cost of $135 billion since 2021. Work time loss peaked in 2022 at 67% above the 2019 time frame and has since dropped to 22% in 2023. So there has been improvement, but it's still standard deviations above the long-term trend. To sum up the post-pandemic policy scorecard since 2021, excess deaths, 1.1 million total, with 300,000 in the 15 to 64 age group for a total cost of $15.6 billion. Excess disabilities, 2.3 million. 3.5 million for total population, estimated cost $77 billion. Excess lost work time, 28.4 million individuals, estimated cost $135 billion. Total human cost is $33 million, and total economic cost $227 million. $33 million is about 10% of the U.S. population. If you assume it's vaccine-related, that's 13% of the vaccinated population. If you assume a 25% did not get the vaccine. It should be noted that this compares to 458,000 excess deaths, zero excess disabilities, and a total economic cost of $50 billion for 2020. Obviously, the policy cure was undeniably worse than the illness. We at Finance Technologies understand that there may be many cofactors in these results, but we believe the vaccine introduction is predominantly responsible for what we are calling the post-pandemic policy scorecard. The blame of the vaccine could be put to rest if studies were conducted of vaccinated versus unvaccinated individuals. Independently of whether it's the vaccine or not, as a nation, we should all collectively want to know what is actually causing these tragic health results. However, the silence by the health authorities and the U.S. government strongly suggests they know the answer to that question. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dowd. Now, again, you're a finance guy, you're a numbers guy, you're not a doctor. And one of the reasons you step forward is because our federal agencies aren't transparent. They're not conducting the studies. They simply don't want to know, in my mind. So you threw out a lot of numbers there. First of all, can you just talk about the quality of your data? Again, as you heard with my oversight letters, they're not providing their analysis of their VAERS, you know, their safety surveillance systems. So now people like you, and there are other people that are just taking a look at death statistics or disability statistics. Those take a while to be published. But talk about just the quality and really the indisputable nature of the data that you've used to come up with this analysis.
Yeah, so we've calculated excess deaths, disabilities, and injuries. Excess deaths, We wrote methodology papers and how we calculate them. Three different methods. We prefer the second method. These can be compared to the actuarial tables from the insurance industry, which saw similar excess death in their group life policy. So these excess deaths are undeniable. What is going on currently is certain governments are now changing how they calculate these numbers. The ONS just announced a change to the calculation methodology for their excess death number, which reduces, obviously, the excess deaths because they like that result better. We suspected that might happen, so that's why we wrote our methodology papers and published them in September of 2022. And the actuarial tables that the insurance companies use haven't changed. So excess deaths are continuing. The insurance companies are seeing the same excess mortality, especially in the working age population. So these deaths are undeniable. You can't hide the dead bodies, unfortunately.
So again, you publish all your information on your website. Was it One America? Is that the insurance company that's kind of the first revelation of this? Was an insurance company out of Indiana?
Well, One America CEO Scott Davis in a Chamber of Commerce meeting revealed that he had seen 40% excess mortality in the millennial age group, 25 through 44. And even as high, actually for 25 through 64. And he said that's a 10% increase would be once in a 200-year flood or a three-standard deviation event. 40% was off the charts, just off the charts.
Friends, we're going to have to stop there with that testimony today. And Lord willing, we'll be picking up tomorrow with other guests that spoke as well. But just hearing this latest guest, Ed Dowd, talking about, you know, since the so-called vaccine, the shot came out, 1.1 million excess deaths, 3.5 million excess disabilities, injuries, lost work time at $135 billion. These are real numbers, ladies and gentlemen, that the media is not giving out, Big Pharma is not giving out, Big Tech is not giving this out, and the federal health agencies are not releasing this kind of information. Senator Ron Johnson put together this roundtable discussion on federal health agencies and the COVID cartel. And very quickly, why does all this matter? Because, friends, what has happened with the COVID outbreak are measures never before seen in our country. Keep in mind that there's planning and preparation that's going on right now for what they are calling Disease X. We are told it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. We're also told it could be 20% deadlier than COVID. So, friends, we're bringing this information. There's so much more. I can tell through the amount that we've gotten through today, we're not going to be able to air the entire panel here. But for you to be informed on the issues that are going on, there are people who are digging for the truth. People are willing to expose it. But friends are being deplatformed. They're being demoted. They're being fired as a result of actions that they have taken. Well, friends, there's much before us, and all the more important to keep a nation like this in our prayers. God bless you, folks. Thanks for joining us on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.